Hi, this is Tanya Domi. Welcome to The Thought Project, recorded at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, fostering groundbreaking research and scholarship in the arts, social sciences, and sciences. In this space, we talk with faculty and doctoral students about the big thinking and big ideas generating cutting-edge research, informing New Yorkers and the world. The study of neuroscience encompasses broad terrain covering everything from the root of mental disorders such as depression to the cause of neurodegenerative diseases such as multiple sclerosis. Dr. Patricia Casaccia joins us today to discuss her research in this important field that is seeking a cure for nearly 1 million people living with this disease in the United States today. Dr. Casaccia is the Einstein Professor of Biology at the Graduate Center, founding director of the Neuroscience Initiative at the Advanced Science Research Center, and the co-director of the Joint CUNY Mount Sinai Glial Center. She received her medical degree with honors from the University of Rome and a PhD degree in neurobiology from the State University of New York Health and Science Center, Brooklyn. Casaccia's lab is working to uncover how factors like stress, the bacteria inside our guts, environment, and other influencers can trigger or contribute to the progression of neurological diseases. Her team, for example, has identified links between obesity and the progression of multiple sclerosis, natural disaster in infant mental health, and exposure to stress and reduced proliferation of the cells that create the protective sheath around our nerves. Dr. Casaccia is here to talk with us about this growing area of discovery and how it offers a promising possibility for developing new therapies and interventions. Welcome to The Thought Project, Patricia Casaccia.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
So, Dr. Casaccia, I'd like to start out by giving our audience a baseline understanding of your particular area of interest known as epigenetics. Can you explain to us what epigenetics are and how they have a different determining factor on our genes rather than on our DNA?
So, I think there is an important distinction between genetics, which defines the study of the information that's present on our genes, in our genome, in our DNA, and epigenetics, where the prefix epi comes from Greek, right? And it means on top of or in addition of. And so the entire concept is the fact that our genes can be modified by our lifestyle, environment, exposure. So to give you an analogy, I thought perhaps it's pretty interesting. You can envision the genome as the words in a book. So, you know, okay, you can imagine, you know, you might have the DNA with many words. This represents the book. Well, the epigenome would be your highlighter or your tags that you can place to highlight certain words.
Aspects.
Or to read certain pages while others can be ignored. So why is this important?
I see. So how did you become interested in this area of research? What led you to it?
So first of all, I just think that there is something quite interesting that is happening nowadays, which is, you may have heard, there is the 1-2-3 and me, right? Many people are trying now to understand their genome and to understand what genes do I have. And sometimes people are also scared. If you have a genetic predisposition, for instance, to neurodegenerative disorders, oftentimes it's seen as something inevitable. But there is nothing like that, right? You still have the ability to affect which genes are expressed. So just to give you an example, we all have a single DNA molecule throughout our bodies, right? Every single cell, right? So if you are part of skin, hair, if you are a bone, muscle, or a brain cell, you will have the same DNA. And yet you have an exquisite level of cellular diversity, very high specialization. So the genes do not change. What changes? are these epigenetic tags. Is the fact that brain cells read certain tags, muscle cells read other tags.
I see.
And that's the entire concept of epigenetic. Similarly for the diseases, it's quite similar.
So this led you to, I understand, to really explore the whole disease process of MS. I mean, your lab recently made a pretty significant discovery showing that MS patients who are overweight and obese have more severe disease progression. Can you talk to us about the mechanisms that contribute to the high burden of disease in overweight patients? Which is a significant issue in America today.
Well, the entire concept of overweight, obesity, and the relationship to neurodegenerative diseases is much broader than just multiple sclerosis. I mean, there are clear studies that reveal the impact that being overweight might have on Alzheimer's, Huntington, or Parkinson's disease as well. So our interest was from a perspective of, are there changes to the epigenome that can be related to this? And if so, what are they?
Can you talk to us about how that contributes, these mechanisms, how they contribute to the higher burden on overweight patients?
Okay, so I think we need to step back a little bit.
Okay, and, please.
Okay, and just to start, so let's go back and try to understand a little bit more of what is epigenetics. So I started out with this analogy, right? And the analogy was the book versus the textbook.
Right.
But if now we try to look at a molecular level, what does it mean? So what does it mean exactly, right? The genes are formed by letters, right, that are encoded in our double helix, which is the DNA.
Right.
But this double helix is very long. If you think, it's almost 2 meters and has to fit within each single tiny cell, which is just a few microns large.
Right.
How is this achieved? Well, the way it's achieved is because each cell wraps these genomic DNA around little proteins. We can envision them almost like little balls, right, around which this RNA is wrapped. And if it's tightly wrapped, sometimes cannot be expressed, so the genes is silenced. If it is in a situation where it can loop out, the gene can be expressed. So epigenetics is the study of molecular changes occurring that are allowing these wrapping to be very tight and genes not to be expressed, or molecules to be placed on the DNA, certain letters. For instance, the C can be methylated, and this methyl cap that it is placed would silence certain genes. So you can see the importance of this is broad, right? I mean, it's broad, and it made up, depending on the type of cell that it affects, it could have a tremendous impact. So in our case, for instance, you can almost see that for humans, epigenetic has been shown as an adaptation to the environment. So to give you an example, if you think of the Second World War in the Netherlands, there was the Dutch famine. And the Dutch famine in some of the farm provinces was induced by the fact that some of the trains were stopped by the Germans so that food and fuel could not reach people in
these
areas.
Right.
So at around 1945, there were 20,000 people who died in these specific regions. And some women were pregnant, right? So now you had children. And those children ended up having tremendous metabolic problem. They ended up with obesity, diabetes. Why? Is because being in utero while the mother was
under that stress.
Under that, not just the stress,
right,
but under severe food deprivation,
right,
taught the epigenome that they had to modify the DNA in such a way that they should be able to extract from food as much nutrient as possible, as many nutrients as possible.
Interesting.
And when those children grew up, and now they are, you know, my age or, you know, and they have their own children.
Right.
Those people tend to be more obese or to have a greater percentage of diabetes. This is because they learned from their mother, the genome learned from their mother to introduce. So you can see now this is just to give an example of metabolism.
Sure.
So if now we move this to the diseases itself,
mm-hmm.
and to look at our study, just to tell you what was the study, we followed at the multiple sclerosis clinic at Mount Sinai, we followed two groups of patients, and what we noticed is that the epigenome in some of the blood cells of the patients who were overweight was changed compared to the epigenome of patients who were not overweight, who had the normal body mass index.
That's interesting.
And what was determining this were specific fats that are present in the blood, and they're called ceramides. So these are lipids. Many times we hear about cholesterol,
right.
triglycerides, right? You may have heard.
Of course, of course.
But now there are these new fats that are becoming of high interest, and they're called ceramides.
Ceramides.
And they can. And what's interesting is that if you have a process already occurring in your brain, some of the membrane can. Some of the cells may die. Some of these fats that form the membrane may be released. And together with the intake of fats from your diet, they synergize and they can create more changes that might affect the epigenome of immune cells that eventually will travel to the brain and attack more your neurons. So the link is exactly from the diet to the type of fats that you have in the blood. We could actually label these fats and show that they can directly enter inside the nucleus of the cells and attach to the DNA, where then they can modify this gene expression.
So you have this partnership with Mount Sinai Glial Center, and you've been looking at just what you explained to me about the mechanisms with respect to MS. What are you doing right now with Mount Sinai? What kind of work specifically are you researching?
So we are very interested in understanding this specific question of why some patients have a stable course of the disease. Some of the multiple sclerosis patients have a stable course of the disease, while others tend to progress relatively fast. So they tend to need the help of a cane,
right.
and then a wheelchair. What is the difference between those patients? So one is the study that we were discussing about, but another study is trying to understand if there are specific changes that we can detect in the cerebrospinal fluid. And the cerebrospinal mm-hmm. fluid is this fluid that surrounds the brain and the
right.
spinal cord.
Right.
So we have been looking at molecules that can be differentially present. And once again, the ceramides popped up as one of these molecules that are present there. And what we think is happening is that those ceramides also have the ability to enter inside the neurons. And in the neurons, we have these little organelles that are called mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
The mitochondria are the energy-producing cells. So if you have a lot of energy, you feel good, right?
Right.
If you don't have energy, you feel fatigued. It's very similar for our brain, right? If neurons have a lot of energy, they are capable of proper function. If they are not, they become severely affected and damaged. So we are trying to understand what is this mechanism? How does it work? And what can we do to try to fix it? So this is the work that we have with the multiple sclerosis clinic there, more specifically with Dr. Ilana Katzand, who has been our partner for many of those studies.
Yeah, there's nearly 1 million people in the United States living with this disease. And
yes.
I have some personal friends that have this disease. And as you've described, some people are highly mobile and active, and you would never know that they had MS, whereas others rapidly diminish.
Correct.
Yeah. It's yes. very, very striking how different it can be in it, how it presents itself.
Yes. And this is why I've been interested also in epigenetics, because also in my case, there is familiarity for multiple sclerosis, right? I have MS in my own family. And so I've been really interested in understanding, as perhaps many listeners, right, when you know that you have a genetic predisposition of this, or someone
sure.
in your family has it,
has
is it. There anything that you can do to improve it? And this has been
so that's
a lot
been
of
an
work.
Informative factor
Absolutely.
in your research.
Absolutely.
So your work is described as being really very cutting edge, and you recently received this very prestigious award from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke. It's the Outstanding Investigator Award. This is going to be accompanied by money as well for your research. Tell me what this means to you.
I think that life of a scientist, it's has two components, right? Has a component of excitement, which is linked to research, but there is also a component that it is a struggle. And this struggle because doing research is not cheap, right? It costs a lot of money for experiments, you know, the type of machines that we need to use, the type of reagents that we need to use. So the way we can perform research is by applying for what are called these competitive awards from the federal government, which are highly competitive grants that are peer-reviewed by several other scientists. So for me to receive this award has been both a tremendous sign of relief because
you'll be able to research.
Exactly.
Yes.
And also it's really humbling because it means that my peers have acknowledged the quality of the work of my team, right? And this is a team work, so I couldn't have done this without my team at the ASRC.
So your work, though, it really seems to focus on neurological disease, and it also has become more and more apparent when you, like, read in popular media, brain, mind, brain, mind, brain. You see these articles all the time now about the brain and how little we know. And so your research and your work is an aspect of the mind, brain, behavior. In general, people are trying to figure out, well, what we don't know about the brain seems to be significant.
Well, you have to think the complexity of this organ, right? I mean,
sure.
If you think of liver has few cell types, or even in muscle, you know, is very simple as an organ.
Right.
The brain has billions of cells. And those cells are interconnected in many ways. Not only you have neurons and neural network, you have all those glial cells that serve a number of functions. For the longest period of time, we have focused on one of those cell types, neurons. And what we have been interested in and what we're advocating is to really understand better glial cells. So they are in contact with blood vessels. I mean, you have to think of how they're sensing constantly the elasticity of the blood vessels, the type of metabolites that are present in the blood. There is this communication, right? The blood serves as a center of communication from the periphery to the brain, right?
Right.
And if you think that there are relationships between the gut microbiota, right, and the type of brain. So what we are trying to understand is understand more how those glial cells function from a molecular perspective in response not only to neural activity, but also to metabolic signals that are coming from the periphery, and also physical signals. I feel that in biology, we have forgotten oftentimes simple rules, right? The fact that we perceive temperature, right? The temperature differences. Animals adjust to temperature differences and climate changes. Do humans also adjust? And if so, do they use epigenetics for doing that? Within the molecular level, if you think, an atherosclerotic blood vessel is very hard and stiff versus the blood vessels can be elastic in someone who is healthy. What happens to the cells that contact the blood vessels? Do they perceive stiffness? Do they feel this stiffness in terms of perception of physical forces? And if so, is this the reason why we have not been able to treat certain disorders up to now? Because we have focused solely on one aspect and we have forgotten that there are many other parameters to take into consideration. So this is what this grant is about. It's about biosensors. And biosensors in the sense that cells are indeed these biological little sensors of microenvironment, both in terms of chemical and physical signals.
Well, this is a significant area of research. What you're doing at the AFSRC is groundbreaking work. I want to take the opportunity to thank you so much for coming in today and sharing your research with us. And we want to congratulate you on this significant award.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning into The Thought Project, and thanks to today's guest, Dr. Patricia Casacha of the Advanced Science Research Center at the Graduate Center, CUNY. The Thought Project is brought to you with production, engineering, and technical assistance by Sarah Fishman. I'm Tanya Domi. Tune in next week.